We have five papers on the program, but only three can be delivered, I regret to say. One due to a visa issue, and the other due to a technical question, I guess. We will begin with Yanis Varoufakis, who is speaking on, in the short title, The Reverse Alchemy of the Eurozone.
Thank you, James. Thank you, everyone. Good morning. That the Eurozone is at an advanced stage of disintegration is perhaps a bit contentious, but that the fact that it is a problem which resulted from a faulty institutional design, which is now resulting in serious difficulties across the continent, is not only universally accepted, but it's also the premise of my paper. In addition, another premise of my paper is that the evolutionary fitness of any institutional framework depends heavily on the capacity of the institutional framework in question to adapt itself and to find a way of responding effectively, or at least to some extent effectively, to its initial institutional design faults. Now, an excellent case in point is the bailout funds that were created in the Eurozone by which to deal with the idiocy of having created a Eurozone, a common currency area, without any provision for what happens when a major financial crisis begins, which is also partly caused by the very creation of the common currency area. These new institutions, the European Financial Stability Facility, which then evolved into the more permanent European Stability Mechanism a few months ago, are the focus of my paper today, because, as I've been saying for 3 years, ever since the crisis became abundantly obvious to everyone, was that the greater the good in Europe, after 21 summits, I believe, if I've not miscounted, have managed to create a toxic remedy by which to deal with an architectural design fault. And the question is, just is it possible to model this in an analytical manner? Because economics has not caught up with the spectacular mess that is the Eurozone, simply because the Eurozone is such a brand new disaster and unique in economic history that I don't believe that economists have had a chance to begin modeling what is in popular culture referred to as a domino effect. I prefer, as a Greek, not to refer to it as a domino effect, because I do not want to give prominence to the first domino that starts it. I prefer to call it, if you want, the popcorn effect, because the popcorn effect is guaranteed. Even if you remove the first corn that pops, the rest will keep popping anyway, if the circumstances and heat and design of the whole thing is correct. So allow me to go straight into this paper by looking at the way that I try to answer the very simple question: can we model this negative dynamic, which in the end I'm going to be calling the Eurozone's reverse alchemy? Let me remind you that alchemists try to start with lead and end up with gold. We in Europe, we are doing exactly the opposite. Now, it all began, of course, when interest rate spreads shot up. In Greece first, then following the Greek debacle in Ireland, then in Portugal, and so on and so forth. Let me define S as the interest rate spread between the marginal member state of the Eurozone at point T and the lowest interest rate member state, Germany, let's say. A very simple model of interest rate spreads within a currency union like the Eurozone would have the interest rate spread of the marginal member state depend on a number of variables. Firstly, the gap between the interest rate paid by this country for its public debt at a particular point in time and its growth rate, that is, the differential rate of increase in the size of the debt mountain and the national income mountain, a shock parameter which comes into play, that omega, which takes a positive value, therefore boosting the spreads when, for some psychological reason, growth rates fall below a certain threshold, G star, usually zero, in other words, when we have an official recession. The overall debt, public D and private pi, as a proportion of national income. Net capital flows into the country, which are very significant, especially in the context of a banking crisis and the capital flight that we have observed in Eurozone member states, but also in countries like Japan, which explain to a very large extent why you can have a very high debt-to-GDP ratio, which is sustainable with very low interest rates. Lambda is also an important parameter, especially for countries like Italy and Spain, because it captures the proportion of public debt held domestically. And that, for instance, explains the significant difference in interest rate spreads between Italy and Spain. Italy famously has a very large proportion of its debt held domestically. And finally, that capital B, which is specific to the post-bailout Eurozone case. Let me remind you of the whole notion of bailouts as they emerged following the Greek bailout Mark I in May 2010. Europe, the Eurozone was predicated upon the presumption of what I call perfectly separable debts. If you want, no bailouts, no transfers between member states. So the idea is that you have your own debt and there is going to be no within Eurozone transfer system or mechanism, even if all hell breaks loose, as it did in 2010. In its wisdom, Europe's leadership tried to preserve this axiom of perfectly separable debts, while at the same time having bailouts. So the result of that was a CDO-like bailout fund that borrows internationally, issuing bonds, EFSF bonds, which, however, are compartmentalized. Each one of those bonds comprises different segments, each assigned to a different member state, Germany having the largest part in proportion to its GDP in the Eurozone, France has the second largest one, and so on. Each of these compartments of these EFSF bonds comes with its own interest rate, reflecting the member state's interest rate, its own default probability, or even though it's never stated. Okay. And the reason why I'm calling this a CDO-like toxic debt instrument is because of this very curious situation where a member state, a marginal member state, is a creditor, a guarantor of this debt one moment, and then when it falls out of the money markets, as for instance Ireland did after Greece, or Portugal after Ireland, suddenly, within the same bailout mechanism, it becomes a debtor. And then suddenly, what happens, of course, then, is that its burden, its guarantees, shift onto the next marginal, onto the new marginal member state, therefore increasing B, and that is this burden. And my simple proposition is that the first three partial derivatives for this one, that one, and that one are positive, and the final three are negative. It's a very simple idea. Okay. Crucial to this dynamic is the question of what determines the threshold level of the spreads, such that when the marginal member state's spread exceeds that threshold, then the probability of exiting money markets for that particular member state is boosted significantly. And it would be my hypothesis that it depends on two things: the pace of refinancing necessary to prevent insolvency, and of course the overall public debt to GDP burden of the particular member state. Now, having set up the model so far, this very simple model so far, we can proceed with an extension of this analysis to take account of the varying likelihood probability that the marginal member state, today let's say that the marginal member state is Italy, since already Spain has received bailout funds from the ESM. What determines the probability of a market exit of the currently marginal member state? It's got a very simple idea here, that it is proportional to the difference between the interest rate spread of the marginal member state and the threshold. So the greater that difference, the greater the probability of an exit. So since, by definition, S star is a threshold beyond which this exit probability, exit not from the Eurozone, but from the money markets, increases beyond, let's say, a half, then it's quite straightforward to capture this relationship by means of some kind of logit function or, in this case, a cumulative normal distribution. So let's put everything together for a neat, what I think is a neat picture of this negative dynamic. And I will give you a cross diagram. You haven't seen one since your undergraduate macroeconomic days. So, N is the number of member states of the Eurozone that are still in the money markets. And F is the number of fallen states. So in May 2001, F rose from 0 to 1, 1 being my beloved Greece. And now it's around 4. So clearly, as the crisis deepens and the contagion proceeds, we are sliding down that blue line. Okay. Now, remember what B is. B is the burden of having guaranteed the debts of the fallen states for the marginal state. And, of course, it is a straightforward, I've used an arbitrary function, but let's just, for argument's sake, accept that this is a kind of relationship one would expect between this burden and the number of fallen states that there are. So obviously, the more fallen states, the more states have fallen out of the money markets and rely on the EFSF or the ESM, the greater the burden for the marginal member state at that particular point in time. And as that burden increases, of course, the interest rate spread of the marginal member state rises too. Now, suppose S0 was the interest rate spread of the marginal member state right at the outset, just before the crisis began. So S0 would be the spread that Greece was paying in, let's say, the end of 2009, the beginning of 2010. And if S star is that threshold beyond which that country, or whichever country happened to be in that situation, is, then of course, any S in excess of a star is going to start triggering the popcorn effect. So let's say that there's some kind of shock, which I'm not going to go into in particular now, because this, as you can see, is a very simple analysis, static so far, but I will dynamize it in a minute. Let's say that the number of states, or even one, has fallen out of the money market, so we slide from this point, which is the original point, to this point. Then immediately the burden of the marginal member state is going to go up. That will increase spreads. If they go up above a star, then there is going to be another fallen state that joins the ranks of the already fallen ones. That will push the burden of the next marginal state up. That will increase, again, spreads for that state, and so on and so forth. Now, this looks complicated. You can ignore it safely. All I'm doing is, just because I started with a cross diagram where we start from zero and spreads increase in this direction, I just want to flip this over so we start from zero and go in that direction. And the reason why I want to do that is because I want to build another diagram on top of that where S rises from left to right and not from right to left. And the diagram I'm going to add there is the one that we saw before, the one that links the probability of exiting the money markets for the marginal state to the interest rate spread of that marginal state at that particular point in time. So this is the same diagram that you saw before. I just positioned it on top of the existing one. And these diagonals just ensure that there is symmetry, that a star is measured on this axis and on that axis, but in the opposite direction. Now, having established this simple diagram, I mean, it is very simple in analysis. The geometry may look a bit complex, but it isn't. Let's have a look at the way in which we can tell a story about the evolutionary dynamics of this monstrosity that we created. Right. We've already established or hypothesized that if the interest rate spread of the marginal member state exceeds a certain threshold S star, then the probability that this member state is going to fall out of the money markets is going to rise above a certain level. So we can capture this very simply by saying that the rate of change, the probability of exiting the money markets, is some positive function, that's an eta parameter, of the difference between the interest rate spread and that threshold beyond which that probability rises. That's effectively restating what we've already said, but dynamizing it by means of a very, very simple first-order differential equation. Similarly, money markets respond to a perception, a subjective belief of the probability with which the marginal member state is going to drop out of the money markets and seek help from the ESM or the FSF before that. They form some kind of subjective probability threshold beyond which they start pushing the spreads for that particular member state up. That is, they demand higher interest rates to lend to that state. And let's suppose that this is P star. So once the probability, the subjective probability of belief of an exit from the money market, let's say for Italy, rises above a certain threshold, let's say P star, then the interest rate spread for Italy begins to rise. Now, it's very simple to see the kind of evolutionary dynamics that result from these exceptionally straightforward hypothesis assumptions. You can see that when S is on the right of this vertical line, then probability P of an exit from the money markets is going up. The red arrow is pointing upwards. And when S is less than this threshold, it has a tendency to fall. Similarly, when the probability of a money market exit rises above the threshold P star, by definition, this is how I define P star, what happens is that S has a tendency to rise, that is, the interest rate spread of the nation is going to go up in this direction, the blue arrow horizontally to the right, and vice versa. Now, if you look at this phase diagram, because this is effectively what we've ended up with, it's very easy to see what kind of dynamics we have. If we start in the top left-hand side quadrant, there will be a tendency for the system to move to one of its evolutionary equilibria, which is on the top right-hand side, where S is increasing inexorably and P turns to 1. In other words, this is the end of the Eurozone. The other evolutionary equilibrium is at the bottom left. This is what Mr. Olli Rehn and Angela Merkel and our great European leaders are hoping for, and that is that we are going to be on a trajectory that leads to the elimination of P and of interest rate spreads, or at least interest rate spreads falling back to something like S0. What I haven't said anything about yet is the conditions under which these loans to the fallen states are given. And of course we know what they are. Savage austerity in the middle of a global recessionary climate. Now, what austerity does, I won't take you back to the previous slides because it's too early in the morning for this, but let me remind you that that S function was not just a function of B, it was a function of a host of variables, including the difference between the interest rate paid and the growth rate. So austerity pushes G down, so it increases the difference between interest rate and G and the growth rate, and by doing that, it shifts this purple function in this direction. And by so doing, it shifts S star in this direction, and because I've flipped it over here, it pushes it in that direction over there. So effectively, this goes to the right. So austerity pushes S, the spreads function, in that direction, And by so doing, it shifts the whole evolutionary process in the direction of the disastrous evolutionary equilibrium. And then what we have, of course, since Europe is utterly incapable of planning an escape from a brown paper bag, you have Mr. Mario Draghi, the president of the ECB, trying to quell the fires that have been stoked by this evolutionary process. So he comes up with announcements like the LTRO a year ago, or the outright monetary program of last, what was it, early September, which was foreshadowed at the end of July. And effectively what he's saying is that when he makes his great statement that the European Central Bank is going to do what it takes to stop this evolutionary process from taking us to the top right-hand side of the diagram, and believe me, it will be enough. Isn't that what he said? What effectively he does is he pushes the S star back in this direction, on this axis, and in this direction on that axis, simply by ensuring that money markets are coy about betting against the ECB regarding the capacity of the marginal member state to refinance itself. Remember that S-star depended on the refinancing rate. So effectively, when the ECB makes the pronouncement that, just leave it to me. But at the same time, for political reasons, and reasons that have to do with the institutions and the institutional mind frame of the Eurozone, Mr. Draghi was not allowed to make this announcement without adding to it a clause, a conditionality regarding further austerity. So he makes this assumption, but promising to follow it through with further austerity, which does what? It pushes S star in the opposite direction. So this is a little game that we are now playing in Europe. And it's a question of whether the money markets will take the first threat more seriously than the second one regarding the position of S star. It is a merry-go-round. So why has Europe fallen for this institutionalized madness? Why have we created a CDO-like bailout mechanism which, if I'm right in this analysis, and I hope I'm wrong, but I don't think I am, the only hope we have, at least in the short run, is that the mind game between the president of the ECB and the money markets is going to remain indeterminate while recession is increasing the evolutionary forces on the top left-hand side diagram, which are pushing us towards the top right evolutionary equilibrium. Why has Europe done this? Now, it seems to me that the best explanation must be institutional. Clarence Ayres, since I have been awarded this amazing honor, I think it's quite apt that I should dig into his work for an explanation, elegantly explains that beliefs are seldom actuated by economic reality and guided by sound technical thinking. Beliefs pay reality the compliment of imputing belief to ceremonial status, but they do so for the purpose of validating status, not that of achieving technological efficiency, or in the case of the Eurozone, an effective way of dealing with our design faults. Exactly the same in Europe. Validating status in the Eurozone meant, firstly, sticking to the principle of perfectly separable debts and trying to find a solution within the constraints that this validation of the status of our original sin implied. And also, validating the mores, the ethos of financial engineers. Because when our leaders decided we have to do something about this and we have to create a bailout fund, but we have to validate the original sin of perfectly separable debts, and we have to make sure that we do it by means of the same people and the same mindset that we created the original problem. So they turned to the same bankers and financial engineers who were for 20 years cutting their teeth dealing with CDOs. So it is not a great wonder that they came up with an EFSF or an ESM that has a structure of a CDO, because this is what validation does. So you have two validating forces here in great confluence with one another, creating this dynamic. So on this sad but intriguing note, and while the specific example of AIR's brilliance causes me much consternation and sadness about our European continent, allow me to express gratitude for the honor of being AIR Scholar for 2003, which I accept, hopefully, that is, in the hope that I shall prove relatively worthy of it. Thank you.